Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City 88.7 FM with Frances Nesbitt and Mags Morrissey.
Hello and welcome to the Kitchen Garden on Community Radio Kilkenny City. I'm Frances Nesbitt and I'm joined as usual by Mags Morrissey. And we're live today, Friday, and the show is repeated on Monday from 4 to 5. We'd love to hear from you during the show, so feel free to send us any questions or comments that you might have on any of the topics that we cover today. You can get in touch with us by text to 086 353 7782, by phone on 776 2777, or you can email us kitchengarden@ckc.ie. And obviously, if you're listening to a repeat of the show on Monday, don't bother sending us in any texts. Another busy show for you this week on the show. Today, we're going to be talking about elderflowers and some things to do with those. They're coming into bloom at the moment. And we're also going to be talking a little later on to Canadian Janine Kennedy, living in Ireland now, and cooking with crack, about her blog and food writing and what she's up to in Ireland. Mags, how are you?
I forgot to tell you that she lives in Tipperary.
She lives in Tipperary.
Yes, she married a Tipperary man who she met in South America.
People are going to start to talk about the number of Tipperary guests.
People are from Tipperary.
On the show, we have to get lots more Kilkenny people in. A busy food week for you?
Well, one of my busy things was feeding a teenager ready for the junior cert.
Oh, God.
So, anyway, she's got almost six down now, so that's good. Other than that, well, the weather was so nice. It was mostly a gardening week, actually. I spent as much time as I possibly could in the garden. I did go looking for elderflower, and I've realised that on my couple of acres, there's very little elderflower.
Oh.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it?
Well, it's like, everywhere else in the country.
It's everywhere else, yeah. So I did have to go into the neighbours. But when I went to the neighbours, I discovered there was an old lane down the back that had become overgrown in the last couple of years. Well, someone has cleared the whole lot of it. So you can now walk along a lovely lane for at least a mile into the middle of nowhere, really. So so that was a good discovery.
It's nice having somewhere that you can go for a walk without having to get into the car first. It's a real bonus. You know.
With this you could go in your pyjamas if you wanted. Yeah. Like, you're not going to meet too many people, actually. And dogs and children and horse and the whole lot can come
great,
along. So
great.
It's actually,
that's
it's nice. Yeah, it was good. Nice little surprise. Other than that, the radishes I was talking about a couple of weeks ago are actually, they've formed. So you can see the tiny little bit of red at the top of the soil. So that's nice to see, actually. And the I have loads of leaves growing. So Monday, I suppose I was at Bloom, so that was a busy day.
We might talk about Bloom a little later on, all over.
Yeah. Another week of variation.
Well, that's what you want. But the exams are upon us now. Mm-hmm. And is there any kind of brain food that you're giving her when she heads off in the morning? Lots of fish for dinner or anything like
that?
Yeah,
you know what? We had mackerel for dinner the other night. Now, it's probably a little bit late, really, when she started. We did have mackerel. You know what? I was trying not to let her have too much rubbish because it's very tempting to have, we don't really have much chocolate in the house or anything like that. But I was trying to give her like a tiny little bit as kind of just, you know,
well done.
As your mommy, you kind of have to do these sort of things. But other than that, just having loads of kind of salad-y things and fruit and veg and that, which she will eat when it's there. So so she was taking like boxes of, you know, noodly salads and things like that for her lunch because they're not allowed to leave the school and the canteen's closed and all sorts of things. So, but she seems to be flying through it anyway. So we'll all be happy when it's over.
I'm sure. But the kind of hard ones are over already now, really, aren't they? The
English,
long writing
English
ones.
And Irish, yeah. And maths, geography is over now. So, anyway, another couple of days and it's all finished.
Well, if anybody out there has any tips on food for the exam goer or the family that they leave behind, you might give us a shout and let us know what you're doing. Now, you were talking about elderflower there. And it will be coming into full bloom in the coming week. And I thought it might be useful if we talked to people a little bit about what we can do with the flowers in advance so that they can kind of be a little bit prepared.
Yeah, because they are, like, there's lots in bloom, but there's still loads more to come into bloom.
Tons.
I brought in a little bit just for the ambience.
Oh, very
smell.
Good. And the smell. I love the smell of this. Now, as listeners will be able to smell if they put their noses close to the speaker of the radio, Mags has brought in some elderflower. Now, this is funny. The smell of elderflower I really, really like. However, if you take the elderflower off the tree and leave it for a little while, it's not very nice after a little
while. Well, for the rest of the year, apart from when there's a flower on it, it smells kind of musty. It's not a particularly nice looking. It's kind of dry looking. And so
and the flowers do wilt very, very quickly. So if somebody is going to use the flowers, as many of the little flower buds as possible you want open.
Yeah.
Because it that's where the real kind of scent and taste comes from. So pick a bunch that has lots and lots of flowers open. And it's quite early on some of these. You can see the buds are still formed, not open yet.
Yeah.
And then use them pretty much immediately. So pick them, give them a shake, get the insects off them or anything else that's off, on them off, and then use them straight away.
And pick them when they're dry.
Yeah.
So today was perfect.
Perfect day today. But they won't hang around for too long.
No.
They certainly won't improve.
They go very well with gooseberries.
And they come out at the same time, of course.
Yeah, the gooseberries are not... Well, maybe yours are ready, are they?
Not quite ready yet. But again, it's no harm to kind of talk about it just in advance, because if somebody does have a few gooseberries planted, they tend to kind of come all of a sudden.
Yes.
And, well, like most things, I suppose. But... So now is the time to kind of prepare for what you're going to do with them. So this year I'm all out of gooseberry jam. So I have gooseberry jam on the agenda. So I'll maybe we'll talk about that next week actually, because we still have a couple of weeks for the gooseberries.
Yeah, my gooseberries are not quite ready yet, but you can make gooseberries and elderflower go really well in jam or compote or anything like that. But we can talk about that next week.
It makes a really nice dessert actually, gooseberry and elderflower compote and
or some gooseberry and elderflower tart as well.
Very nice. So we've got it the week ahead. We're planning on maybe this Saturday or even the following Saturday using our elderflowers. So what do we do?
Well, cordial is a very obvious one and what a lot of people do. And I actually started it this morning. So all you need is actually to make a few bottles, 10 little florets, which is not very many really when you go out picking them and stuff. And a lemon sliced up, some citric acid. And sugar and water.
Citric acid, you'd get that where?
In the pharmacy. Get a little tub of it for about €2. I think all pharmacies, they had it in Thomastown. I think all pharmacies will have it, but you do need it. And what you want to do, you just shake off any insects that are in the elderflowers and put your water, 600 mils of water, and you need... about 600 grams of sugar, but I'll check that. And you dissolve the sugar in the water, and then pour over the let it cool, let the water cool a little bit. Pour it over the sliced lemon and the elderflowers, and add your citric acid. And you got to leave it overnight. Just cover it in a bowl with a tea towel or something, and leave it overnight.
Now, do cover it though, because at this time of the year, I don't know whether you've spotted the start of the fruit flies.
Oh yeah. There's a lot of flies around.
The fruit flies I noticed this week for the first time, and I was doing a bit of honey harvesting, but they were coming in to keep me company. But yeah, something sweet like that, you'd have fruit flies all over it. So
You'd want to cover it anyway. So it's 900 grams of sugar for your 600 mils of water.
Okay, so
it is quite a lot of sugar actually.
Yeah, 1.5 times sugar to water. Well,
And 45 grams of citric acid.
Of course, the sugar as well as sweetening it and stuff will act as a preservative, so it'll last a little bit longer.
Yeah, it will. Okay. So you're going to leave it for like overnight or up to 36 hours, and then you want to put it through a sieve to get all the big pieces out, and then you need to put it through kind of muslin or something to clear everything out of it, and then you want to put it into some nice bottles that are sterilized and keep it in the fridge.
Brilliant. Now, one of the best things I ever bought was a great big bolt of muslin, and I got it in a Rick Merchants, where was it, in Kilkenny I think actually, and because every time I was doing one of these recipes that said strain through a piece of muslin, you'd go looking for the one piece of muslin that was in the drawer and somebody else had used it for something. So I have a big roll of it now, and it's always there whenever I need it for something like this. See, I ended up one time making some beer and using a pillowcase.
Had a roll of muslin,
there you go. I have a roll of muslin. So buy a roll of muslin, it costs absolutely nothing, and keep it about the house for just such an eventuality. Because with these kind of things, you tend not to kind of think about it until it's in front of you. So the elderflowers are bursting off the trees, or there's fruit falling off the plant. Time to do a bit of jam or something.
Or you've been hearing everybody else talking
about it. Exactly. And then you go looking for jars, and you go looking for muslin, and you go looking for... And you make such a chore of it, you never do it again. So yeah, a little bit of prep, a little bit of advanced kind of thinking. Make your own life easy if you can.
Once you can make this cordial, you can make other cordials as well, like blackcurrant, which is really good. So you kind of... you'll have your skills for this using this one. Cordials are really handy to have, so much better than buying a lot of the stuff. Now, I know Bob and Jones, they make a nice elderflower cordial. You can buy it in a lot of the Super Values and the other shops. But still, it is nice to make your own.
Absolutely. And I stick to the recipe the first time you do it, and then the second time, if you prefer a tartar one, a little bit more citric acid. If you prefer it less sweet, a little less sugar. More sweet, a little more sugar. So make it according to the recipe once, and then kind of adjust the recipe for a future reference.
Recipes are just guidelines, really.
Guidelines, yeah.
Actually, a nice tip. Some recipes will say to squeeze in lemon juice and add your lemon zest, but I just sliced up the lemons, and then when you can take the lemons out afterwards and freeze them, and then use them in gin and tonics or in drinks for the rest of the summer. Well, you can get the rest of the summer out of two lemons, but you can use them again. You might as well use them. It's good to be able to reuse things.
Now, last year I didn't make any elderflower cordial because I have a regular supplier of it. And as you said, Bob and Jones is really, really nice, but it's well worth doing. And as you said, making a cordial is very easy, and once you've done one, you can do more. But what I did do last year was I made elderflower champagne, and it's an alcoholic and slightly effervescent, very like Prosecco, the tiny little bubbles, alcoholic drink, and it's really, really nice. And I scribbled down some notes on it, so I might just mention that now.
Yep, sure.
One of the tips I picked up on this was when I was looking up the recipe, it actually said to pick the flowers early in the morning. And the explanation it gave for that was so that the bees haven't come around yet and nicked all of the nectar out of the tiny little flowers.
Oh, okay.
Which kind of makes sense. But like the flowers will replenish themselves over kind of an hour or two anyway. So,
but if you're taking cut flowers, you should always take them early in the morning. And I'm not sure why exactly, but that's, yeah.
There you go. That's what this person said. Anyway, now, the ingredients for this, not too dissimilar actually to the cordial. It's 2 litres of boiling water, 650 grams of sugar, 2 litres of cold water, and the juice and skins of 4 lemons, and 15 heads of elderflower, 2 tablespoons white wine vinegar, and 5 grams of champagne yeast. Now, it says, this recipe says use the champagne yeast. I used champagne yeast, which worked really, really well. But even if you don't use yeast,
where do you get champagne yeast?
You'll get it again in any kind of beer, homebrew, supply shop, any of those. They'll have little sachets of champagne yeast. Like sachets of it comes dried, and they last for ages. But the flowers are covered in natural yeasts, so if you didn't want to use the champagne yeast, it'll still go alcoholic. It's just you don't know whether it's going to take 2 days or whether it's going to take 4 days. So by adding in the yeast, you kind of give that a bit of a head start. It suppresses the natural yeast, and then it's just a bit more predictable. That's the only thing. So what you do then is you take your brewer's bucket, something plastic, and you pour the water over the sugar and stir it in to dissolve. Then you add the cold water to kind of cool it down a little bit, and add in your lemon skins and juice and the elderflower heads. Now, at that point, because the water's still warm, you're getting a bathe in the kind of smell of the flowers. And you cover everything with some of my muslin, available online now that I've so much of it, and you leave it alone. And after about 3 days, you go in and have a look at it, and you'll see all sorts of froth on the surface and bubbles working away there as the yeast does its thing. And then you can add in the champagne yeast at that point, and it'll kind of take over from the natural yeasts that are on the flowers. And then leave it for like another 3 or 4 days, so it's maybe six days or a week in total, for the full fermentation to take place, and all of that frothing and stuff will have calmed down, and you have a layer on the top then of the flowers, some dead yeasts, and so on. And then what you want to do is you want to take the you want to take off all of the liquid from that, leaving behind the kind of sediment and all of the waste products, and a siphon is really the best way of doing it at. And so I siphon it then into fizzy water bottles. And I was using the ones that I got from one of the German retailers, because they're kind of designed to handle a bit of fizz.
Expansion.
A bit of expansion, and they're a bit kind of stronger. So I got a load of them all up that looked the same, and then I filtered the, or I siphoned the liquid into that, and it's ready to drink after about a week. So you just leave them in the bottle for the secondary fermentation, and actually squeezing the bottle will tell you when it's ready. So when you put the liquid in, if you squeeze it and it's still really, really soft, it means it hasn't kind of taken on a fizz yet. But when you squeeze the bottle and it's quite hard, it's gaseous. The gas has kind of been produced again inside the bottle, and you'll have the little bubbles in the liquid. And I pour it over ice and maybe with a little bit of mint, and it's lovely.
Hmm.
And it's probably the only homemade wine that a lot of the foragers would recommend.
Right.
Now, that's elderflowers for you, and lots of things to do with elderflowers, and we hope
some
of those.
You can make fritters and stuff as well.
Oh, fritters.
Yeah,
that sounds good, actually.
Mm. Yeah. You need a light batter, a very light batter. Mm. Just flour, pinch of salt, an egg, and some water. So it's quite a light batter because they're quite light. And then whisk all of that up. So like you'd make pancake batter or anything batter, and then dip them into it very gently. Just holding the little stalks, dip them in, and then fry them in really hot oil for a couple of seconds, just until they kind of brown up. They don't take very long. And then dip them in, take them out of that, dip them in sugar, and eat them.
What do they taste like? I've never tried that.
Well, you have actually.
Oh, I have. Yes, that's right, yeah.
But they just kind of taste sweet and flowery, actually.
Yeah.
And kind of light and crispy and stuff. So they're definitely worth doing. And they're a little bit unusual looking, you know, because they take on the shape. When you pop them down into the oil, the flowers move out. So they take on the shape that they are in the tree, really. So they're quite unusual looking and nice. They would go down very well with some gooseberry and elderflower compote.
Oh, very good.
Yes.
Wait, when you said that, I thought, that's a brilliant idea. Why didn't I ever think of that? And then just when you reminded me that I did actually try it last year. It is a brilliant idea. And they do. They taste lovely.
I know. I'd forgotten about it as well until today.
Well, there's something else to do with your elderflower. So that's all of the elderflower stripped from all of the trees in Kilkenny now. People using them and leaving none for the bees. Oh, there's a couple of text messages in there. I'll have a look at those during the ad break. But we'll take a break now. And then coming up after the ads, as well as those text messages, we're going to be talking to Janine Kennedy in Tipperary, about life there, coming from Canada, and her cooking with crack. We'll be back just after these.
I'm Garrett Byrne from Campania Restaurant. You're listening to The Kitchen Garden on Community Radio, Kilkenny City.
You can email the show, kitchengarden@corkc.ie. And you're welcome back to The Kitchen Garden. I'm Francis Nesbitt, and I'm here with Mags Morrissey. And thank you to those who have contacted the show. A couple of questions there about elderflowers, but I think we kind of covered off that towards the end, so that's fortuitous. We're here live today, Friday from 4 to 5, and you can get in touch with us by text to 086-353-7782, or as I just said in that little sting, you can email kitchengarden@corkc.ie at any stage. Now, we're joined on the line, I'm delighted to say, by Janine Kennedy, all the way from Canada, but now in Tipperary. Janine, hi, how are you?
Hi, guys, how are you doing?
Hi, Janine.
Hey, Megs.
Thank you very much for joining us. Another Tipperary guest on Community Radio Kilkenny City.
We're taking over.
There's going to be a note from management at some point, I think, about the guests that Mags arranges for the show.
I don't talk about hurling ever, so I think you're okay there.
I did the wee, actually, so that's all right. So, Janine, tell us, how did you manage to come all the way from Canada, and where in Canada, and end up in Tipperary?
Oh, gosh, it's such a long story. I actually grew up on the east coast of Canada, Nova Scotia. There's a small island called Cape Breton. It's not that small. It's about half the size of Ireland. But to Canada, it's small. then I graduated from university. I moved to South Korea, and I met an Irish farmer. And one thing led to another, and we ended up going back to Toronto, where I went to culinary school and became a chef. And then we were married, we had our first baby, or we were pregnant with our first baby, and we decided what better time to come back to Ireland, to the countryside where we're both from. Like, I'm not obviously from Ireland, but I am from the country, so we really wanted to raise our kids in a rural setting, and we had some land, so it was just really, like you said earlier, fortuitous. It was just time for us to move back.
Super. And whereabouts in Tipperary are you now?
I'm just outside Templemore.
All right, yeah.
We have farmland there, yeah. So we have dairy cattle. We have about 60 Frisian cattle and lots of space for gardening and growing vegetables and things like that. So it's been great.
Great. And you do a bit of gardening there yourself?
I do, yeah. I'm very slowly getting the hang of the seasons here, which are very different to the ones in Canada. They're a lot longer, which is great, but the things that you can grow here are different. So I'm still kind of in fighting with weeds that grow just like a jungle. I can't get over how quickly weeds grow here. So I am, it's a learning process for me, but hopefully this year now, this is my year.
And is there anything kind of in the garden at the moment that you're using up?
Yeah, lots of herbs. I just planted out kale. There's this heirloom kale that my brother's mother-in-law gave me the last time I was in Vancouver, so I kind of smuggled it over in my luggage. So I just planted out those seedlings last night, and hopefully they're going to take now.
Any protection around them?
They're in a raised bed, I'm doing some weed protection, just some regular maintenance, and I haven't decided yet. I have to see how much the birds are interested in them, because we do have a lot of birds in the area, before I decide to put down any nests or anything like that. So
it's the cabbage, the cabbage butterflies.
Oh, they're the worst. Yeah. The cabbage. The last few years I've tried to grow cabbage, I'm telling you, I could not stay on top, and I've had 3 babies in 5 years, so I mean, my gardening time has not, you know, unfortunately, it hasn't been a whole lot of time that I've been able to devote to the garden. So one night I'd go out and all of my cabbages would just be gone.
Just skeletons left.
I've been dying to make my own kimchi. So, I mean, I really do want my cabbages to grow this year. It's really a priority.
I think protection is the way to go with that, Janine, if you're able to net them at all. A couple of years ago, I used, your husband will be familiar with it, the plastic farm hose piping for running water to the troughs and so on. I just got that and cut it into 3 meter lengths and sharpened each end. It sticks into the ground nicely, creates a bit of a dome, and then you run some of the butterfly netting across the top of that and stake it down. Nice and easy. You can take it up and store it away, and the hoops are made then for every year.
That's great.
Yeah, so I'd recommend you do that. Keep the butterflies off, because trying to battle with them, if you're busy with babies and cooking and writing and all of that, you're not going to get around to it. So now, there's my tip to you.
Thanks very much.
Now,
thank you very much.
I mentioned a bit of writing, because as well as being an assistant farmer and stuff in Tipperary and growing your own veg, you're doing quite a bit of food writing, aren't you?
That's right, yeah. I am a freelance writer. It all just kind of came from being a chef. In Toronto, I was opening a lot of busy restaurants, and I had a really crazy lifestyle. And we moved to Ireland, and I didn't really have a job, and I was very pregnant with my first child. I was about 6 months pregnant, and I found myself just not really knowing what to do with myself, having been so busy for so long. And I was dabbling in a lot of writing when I was in Toronto. I wrote for one publication in particular, and that just kind of stemmed from there. I started doing more freelancing. Funnily enough, so many Canadians are interested in my story about, you know, moving here away from the big city into a farm and just doing what we love and taking the risk, even though neither of us had jobs. We moved over and we were leading a very comfortable lifestyle in Toronto. So, you know, it's been great for me writing. Like, having moved here has been great for my career in so many different ways.
That's brilliant. But people are interested in that kind of change of lifestyle and escape to the country. And particularly on Twitter, you'd get in touch, or people would get in touch with country people living in the country from the city, and like sitting at a desk in Google headquarters or whatever, and dreaming of kind of getting back to nature and stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely. There's one publication I write for regularly where I have to talk to a lot of people in Canada. You know, I have phone interviews all the time with these people. And a lot of them are chefs, and a lot of them are food professionals and business people themselves, and they're all still in the city center doing what I used to do. And when they find out where I am now and what I'm doing, they're all just like, wow, you're living the dream. Someone said that to me last night. You are just living the dream. Well, I mean, it's a bit muddier than the dream I originally had, you know. It's a bit dustier this time of year when it's really sunny. But yeah, it's definitely, we're definitely living our dream at the moment. It's busy and crazy, but it's worth it.
Good. The best part of living the dream, I think, are the photographs that end up on Twitter or Instagram. But
exactly. We don't show them the other stuff, do we?
A bit muckier, as you said. Now, look, you've left behind city life. You've escaped to the country. You've come all the way from the big city in Canada. Well, from the island in Canada via the big city. Is there anything about life in Canada that you miss?
I definitely miss some of the foods we have. Coming from Toronto, especially, we had such a Canadian food. A lot of people don't know about it, but it's really shaped by the population of Canada and how diverse we are as a people. And that said, we have some of the best ethnic foods you could ever find just in the city of Toronto. I think it's the most multicultural city in the world. So So if there's a type of cuisine, even like a subcategory of a certain type of cuisine that you're looking for, you're going to find it there. And I do miss that sometimes, just being able to stroll out and get my favorite Korean, or you know, go out and try northern Thai cuisine, or just as opposed to just like Thai food. But and of course poutine, which is our national dish, you definitely miss those kinds of things. But as a whole, I think I felt a lot more out of place living in the big city in Toronto as opposed to living in Ireland. The east coast of Canada is all mainly Scottish population. All of the people from Scotland, when they were removed in the early 1800s, they all basically came on the same boat over to the same and settled in the same town.
Wow.
So we're all very Celtic as well. We've developed our own kind of unique Celtic culture over the centuries. And so moving here was not so much of a leap as moving to Toronto was.
Yeah, no, I'm sure it must seem familiar. And I've actually heard some people interviewed from Nova Scotia, some of the older ones, and not Scottish, but their accent's Irish. Like they could from the West Coast, or they managed to hold on to it.
That's right. And sometimes, you know, especially after I've had a few drinks, maybe, you know, a little bit of an accent comes out of me and people say, oh, you're picking up an Irish accent. And I think, I say, oh, no, I just think this is my
Nova Scotian
my
accent.
Britain accent. Yeah, this is just what I got used to not talking like this when I was in Toronto. And especially when I was teaching English in South Korea, you need to have as little an accent as possible when talking to those little kids and teaching them English. So it does get beaten out of you that way.
Well, you've only slipped in one Toronto so far. The rest of the time, it's been all Toronto. Now, you're writing, I really like the blog on cookingwithcrack.com, and
you're
on Twitter at Siucrashack, SiucrShack. And I often see mention of the pop-ups that you do over in Tipperary there.
That's right, yeah. I do regular kind of monthly pop-ups in conjunction with the Green Sheep Cafe, which is in Turles on Friar Street. And White
I've heard some mad stories from that
place. Yeah, yeah. You want to come here with a sense of adventure, for sure. You never know what you're going to get. Mags can well attest to that. So, we do a pop-up about once a month, and White Gypsy sponsors, so we provide a few beverages, and we have a meal. We usually do a different theme. So, for instance, last Saturday we did a Caribbean night because of the lovely weather we've been having. And I barbecued jerk chicken that I had brined in the beer. And we had some rice and beans, coconut rice and beans. We had Jamaican patties, which are a real Toronto specialty, to be honest. I've never been to the Caribbean, but there's a huge Caribbean population in Toronto, so I got used to eating a lot of really great Caribbean food while I was there. We just have a lot of fun with it. We can fit up to 30 people in here at the cafe, and so it's intimate enough that people get to know each other, and it's informal enough that they don't have to sit in one place. I mean, there's barely room for anyone to sit. It's all standing room, so we make food that you can eat while you're standing up, and it's just a lot of fun.
That sounds great. I think we'll have to do an outside broadcast from one of those.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm definitely going to the next one. I missed it last Saturday.
Oh, yeah.
But Janine is a super baker. She makes the most amazing donuts. You've had some of them actually in the past. Most amazing donuts. My children call you the donut lady, actually. I'm sorry.
I'm looking at a photograph of Janine on the website here. She looks nothing like a donut.
No,
we
she
just
doesn't.
Want to clarify.
I don't know. After a few too many donuts, I start looking like one.
But she also made a dip one night, the spinach dip. That was probably one of the nicest things I've ever eaten, actually. I think about it regularly.
Oh, wow.
Oh,
I haven't gotten the menu or the recipe from you yet. But a really delicious, cheesy kind of, was baked in the oven, and then you just dip your bread into it. Oh, it's divine.
See, my approach to food is nothing too fancy, and I respect a lot of the chefs I worked under. I worked under some really amazing chefs over my lifetime, and but I have to say, like, my grandmother and the women that I grew up eating their food at home, they're my biggest inspiration. So I love that home-cooked feel to restaurant food. I like bringing it to my food, and hopefully that's, you know, people are comfortable eating it and enjoy the flavors.
Well, I've heard nothing but good reports about the pop-ups there, and I really like the recipes that are on the blog on cookingwithcrack.com, and there's a great kind of mix there as well, as sweet and savory, and even a kind of how-to. I noticed the how to butcher a whole duck. But you might get up the recipe for that dip that Max was just mentioning, would you?
That you know what, I'll have to do that now, yeah. And you know, I've been turning them into calzones. I've been taking that dip and putting them in pizza dough and turning them into calzones for the markets that I do every Saturday. So, yeah, and they've been selling really well. So I guess, yeah, it's definitely going to have to go up on the blog at some stage.
Good. Now, so you're here in Ireland and you're doing the stuff for the markets and you're doing the stuff for the shop and you're doing these pop-ups. You're using local ingredients, obviously. Is there anything that you've found about Irish food that you really like?
I think Irish food is some of the best food in the world. I'm so lucky to live here. I'm so lucky to live where I live, being surrounded by, you know, artisan cheese and freshly grown vegetables and great beer. I just feel like you have the best raw ingredients in the whole world. Mm-hmm. I've never tasted beef that tastes so beefy. Same with lamb. It just tastes lamby. It tastes like it's supposed to taste. Mm-hmm. And it all comes down to your terroir and, like, the grass that they're eating and the way that they're raised and, you know, the life that they're living. It's a good life for them. Smaller farms, nothing's mass produced here. And I just really, I really think that I've found my place. In Toronto, it's all been done. You know, there's a lot of great local food. There's a lot you could do, but there's no room for innovation anymore. It's all kind of being done. And here, I just find there's so much room to be creative. But there's also those amazing raw ingredients that you get to work with every day. And I just feel really lucky.
Do you know, Janine, I'm sure you must see it all the time, but the Irish, we really don't appreciate the quality of the ingredients around us. And when you say something like our beef tastes really beefy and the lamb tastes of lamb, the Irish have just taken that for granted. I've spoken to so many international visitors now staying at the cottages or at food events, and they're asking me about the diet of animals that are raised here, and they just cannot believe it when I tell them that we feed our sheep grass and we feed our beef grass. They just can't believe it. And that's,
and you taste it.
You taste it. Exactly. Of course you do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we are. We're very lucky. And I'm delighted that you mentioned that, and I'm delighted that you're getting to use all of those ingredients over in Tipperary.
Yeah, no, we have some great ones over here, but Kilkenny has some great ingredients as well, I have to say. I was using some of your rosé veal last week for a few recipes. Kilkenny rosé veal, they're ethically raised. You know, there are a lot of people who kind of turn their nose down to it, but these ones are ethically raised. There's no cage in sight, and they have a great life. They're, you know, outside eating their grass and playing away, and it, again, it shows the love and the care that goes into raising those animals, shows in their meat, and it's just delicious.
We actually have those guys on our lists of guests that we should have in on the show and talk to them about that, because if you use dairy products or you drink milk, well, a byproduct of that industry is the male calves that the cows have. And if we don't use them for something, then they are valueless. And
absolutely.
It's a terrible, terrible waste. But Janine, it's been absolutely lovely talking to you. Really nice to put a voice to the Instagram and Twitter persona, which is at Shukra Shack. And that blog again is cookingwithcrack.com. And full of recipes and just good crack, actually. I highly recommend it to anybody.
Thanks
a million. We'll see you at one of those pop-ups.
Definitely. Yeah, you're so welcome. Cheers.
Bye, Janine. Thanks. Bye.
Bye. Thanks, guys. Bye.
That was lovely.
Isn't she
and
lovely?
And so positive.
She's gorgeous.
So positive about her life here in Ireland and the Irish ingredients and all of that.
And she does a million things, like between the market and writing and three children and the farm and the whole lot, and still is like smiling and happy and
sounds
lovely.
Like a terribly organised woman. I'd say there's a few lists about the place there to be doing that much. But we better take an ad break shortly. Now, coming up after the ads, Mags, we might talk a little about, there's some nature notes that we still want to talk about, the Gelder Rose.
Yeah.
And then we'll be talking about jobs to do in the garden, and there's plenty of those to be done at the moment. I want to have a little kind of mention of bees, because I did my first honey harvest day before yesterday, so we can talk about that too. So we'll take a short ad break, and remember, you can get in touch with us by text to 086-353-7782, or you can email show kitchengarden@crkc.ie.
The Garden of Love by William Blake. I went to the Garden of Love and saw what I never had seen. A chapel was built in the midst where I used to play on the green. And the gates of this chapel were shut, and thou shalt not writ over the door. So I turned to the garden of love that so many sweet flowers bore, and I saw it was filled with graves and tombstones where flowers should be, and priests in black gowns were walking their rounds and binding with briars my joys and desires.
Call us now on 056 7762 777.
Hello, I am John Flynn, and here are some gems. Push twigs of elder tree in the ground around broad beans to keep off black fly. And of course, in my own experience, take the tops off them when you've got all the flowers set.
I thought it would be nice to have a little tip there from Canon Flynn, particularly that one about the elder branches and protecting your broad beans, as we were talking about elderflowers earlier on. And just before the break, we had a poem by William Blake, The Summer. I really like that one as well.
Yeah, me too, actually.
So now, we were going to talk about Gelder Rose. You've got some more flowers in the studio there.
Yes, I went mad.
They look really, really lovely.
Yeah, aren't they the most beautiful flower?
It is gorgeous. It's
a shrub, a native Irish shrub, but you don't see it everywhere. I actually have about 5 or 6 of them in one field, but it's got the most beautiful delicate looking kind of cluster of flowers, and there's a rim of flowers on the outside, and that's the way it stays, so exactly the way you have it there. And bees, I think, are quite fond of these.
Hoverflies too, especially.
Oh, okay.
There's two distinct types of flower on the elder rose, which isn't a rose at all, of course.
Yes, no, yeah. Sorry, it's not a rose at all.
But you've got that outer ring of large white flowers, very, very attractive, but there are no stamens there, so they're completely sterile.
Yes, they're like a 5-petal flower.
Yeah. And they're just a kind of big advertisement to the bees and flowers.
Come to the middle ones.
Yeah.
Ah, okay, very good.
And the middle ones then are the ones that contain the pollen.
And they seem to have, they look like they've got lots of it.
They do.
The stamen stick right out.
Yeah. Very generous flower. Have you ever walked past a bush and heard the buzz when the...
Well, when I went picking these today, actually, it was quite a buzz, actually.
It's loud. The first time I walked past one, there's one just outside the French doors of the house out at Crowan, and when you walk past it, I'm sure there'd been a swarm of bees had formed and started to hang from a branch there, because it's really, really loud. But they're lovely.
They are lovely. Beautiful, actually. They can grow to about 4 metres. Do you know where the name comes from?
No.
Apparently, they're found in Gelderland in the Netherlands.
Oh, right.
So that's what they reckon. Because it is a very unusual name. It's no connection to Rose. I don't know why they're called Rose, but that's where the name comes from. But in the autumn, then, they have the most beautiful red berries. Kind of like a big cluster of almost like a bright translucent-y red berry. So they're very attractive, actually, and definitely something people could plant more of, actually, because you just don't see them that often.
And it's native, and it's very hardy, and it really looks after itself once it gets established. You just have to kind of keep it trimmed down to the height that you want of that.
Yeah.
But it's a lovely, lovely shrub.
Yeah.
You should see more of it. Now, you were in bloom last week and you probably saw lots and lots of kind of traditional planting flowers and also some new ones. How did you find the whole event?
It was super. Really super organised, really nicely laid out. While it was very busy, it didn't feel like you were just going around in hordes of people all the time. They reckon they've been over 120,000 visitors over the 5 days, which is a lot of people.
It's getting as big as the ploughing.
Yeah, it's probably, kind of different. But yeah. I think the show gardens are probably the main attraction. And they were quite spectacular, and they're such fun to look at, actually. It's not as if you're going to come home and do this similar anywhere, but it's just, they were just really nice, and you could stand looking at some of the gardens. The lady Melanie Webb, who was on last week, her garden, which was small, it's smaller than the studio, actually, but you could actually stand looking at all the intricacies of it for ages, her tower, and even she had a little path from the front of it to the shed, which was probably like 1.5 metres, maybe, or something, but it was all individual little stones and that, with really nice planting through it.
Oh, wow.
Really nice planting on the front, kind of little wall and that, and then the shed itself, which was quite spectacular. So that was really nice. But there was... one of my favourite gardens, actually, was the Mamma Mia garden, which was just like, it just looked like a little piece of a Greek island, actually, with whitewashed walls and the paving, and then the blue painted woodwork, and they actually had ABBA playing there pretty much all day.
Well, they had the sunshine to carry it off, because that blue and white that you see on all of the Greek islands is absolutely lovely, but they get a different colour light to the one we do. If you paint everything white and blue here and then you have a miserable winter's day, it's just going to look cold.
It works really well now on Monday.
Stunning sunshine.
Yeah, and they're beautiful olive trees, and all of the planting was obviously Mediterranean. That just looked really nice. Then another one of the really spectacular ones that got loads of awards actually, and got contractors awards that I didn't even know existed until Monday, but was the sustainable seafood garden. So that was one of the large gardens, actually. And literally, they made on set a quayside with water and ladder and the whole lot.
There was a boat in that as well, wasn't there?
There was a boat, there was water, I suppose, maybe 7 or 8 metres by 10 metres, kind of a little pool. And the boat, the guy who actually designed it from County Louth was very chatty. The boat, he'd bought two different pieces of boat to get the right boat. Something from Donegal, something else might have come from Louth, and then it all went to joiners in Monaghan who put it together and put an actually working kitchen into it. So they were able to cook and do little good cookery demonstrations on the boat.
That's hilarious.
The stone came from a quarry in the west of Ireland, and it just looked, well, it all just looked perfect. You couldn't imagine that it wasn't always there and stuff. It just looked so nice. But the water, this is kind of fascinating, actually.
Would you just take, is that a phone on the desk there, Mike? So you just throw it down on a soft surface? Thanks.
The water was only about 20 centimetres deep, but it looked really dark. He was explaining to us that he uses a beetroot dye to make it dark so that it looks much deeper. So it looks the real deal, actually. And then there was beautiful planting, actually, around the edges of it. So there was kind of like waterside planting, and then, as it, you know, there was birch trees and everything. And they were handing out all of their planting list, so you could take that away with you. That one was sponsored by BIM because it was about sustainable seafood. And there was a beautiful table set out. The table was made from, I'm not sure what kind of wood, but some nice, very kind of rustic looking wood. And the legs were from scaffolding. And that was all set out. It looked like you could just go in and sit down and have dinner and stuff. So it was really nice.
That sounds lovely.
And then there was lots of other, like there was a canal and a lock garden, which was just quirky and interesting. Lots of nice architecture as well, kind of, you know, very straight lines and stuff, and then really nice planting. Again, lots of lupins and lots of foxgloves, which I'd seen, I think, maybe 2 years ago there as well. But yeah, really nice, and just like nice to wander around. There was loads of music playing, like Lyric FM had a little stage and a marquee. They had live music on. Well, every time I passed, there seemed to be live music on. And then there was occasional little music at corners here and there. And of course, loads of nice food.
Oh, yeah. Food is a big part of it now.
Yeah, it is.
And of course, the whole thing is sponsored by and organised by
Bord
Bia.
Yeah, yeah. So it is kind of a food and garden show. So there was a huge tent of kind of artisan producers, everything from really nice vinegars to donuts to jams. And I saw Ballykeith Distillery, actually, from just outside from Ballykeith, actually, there. And you could buy all sorts of nice food, all sorts of nice drinks. And the weather was so nice and stuff. People were just sitting around in the grass eating.
And you brought back some gifts for us here. And I see in the GIY, our friends in Grow It Yourself down in Waterford, there's a little coffee cup full of seed balls?
Seed balls, yeah. Wildflower seed balls.
So wildflower seeds mixed up with some clay, probably some activated charcoal in there as well, and all just rolled up into a ball and gone hard. And we can take these away and throw them somewhere and
and they should grow.
A bit of guerrilla gardening and some wildflowers should come from that.
Exactly.
And you also brought me back a present, which is very kind of you. Thanks very much. A little kind of micro carnation, so a little Dianthus Watfield cancan. That's really lovely. Thank you.
Yeah.
My mother's favourite flower. Well, actually, my favourite flower to buy for my mother because they lasted for ages.
Well, there you go. I hope that one lasts for ages too.
But you buy a rose and it might last a few days, and then I'd buy her a bunch of carnations, and a fortnight later she'd still have them in the vase. So I thought, being the engineer, that's great value. I'll buy
that. There
we go. Yeah. Well, that sounds fabulous, and I've missed it for yet another year, but I'll go to bloom sometime, maybe next year. Now, One of the things I wanted to mention before we move away from food is that this weekend in Thomastown, the Men's Shed are hosting their first birthday party, and it's on the on Sunday, which is Street Feast Day. And Street Feast is a nationwide organised event where streets or housing estates or groups of friends come together and arrange for the breaking of bread together and sharing of some food. Lovely idea. It runs all over the country. There's details on Street Feast if you look up on Google, streetfeast.ie. And in Thomastown, from 12 to 3, the Men's Shed are having a barbecue at the community centre. It's free, but they would like donations to help them continue the great work that they're doing out in Thomastown. So if you have nothing on Sunday and you fancy a sausage or a burger or some salads or some drinks, come along to the community centre in Thomastown between 12 and 3. Now, we better talk about some jobs to do in the garden, because we're at peak jobbing time of the year now. There's loads to do. You've been doing plenty out in the garden, bit of thinning.
And well, I'm not quite thinning yet, actually. I'm still planting out, to be honest.
But, and what are you planting out?
Well, I planted out loads of courgettes, actually, yesterday, and peas and beans. Planted out. I'd started some beetroot inside, so I've planted those out. And flowers. I've gone mad with flowers this year, so I've planted out lots of flowers. Some, I think, actually, I kind of have a wildflower patch, but I was, you know, taking out some grasses out of it and putting in more flowers. But I think I kind of just hit a really dry patch, and I probably have lost a few in there. But I will see, they might come back. So,
find something that likes really, really dry.
But it's like now you can't even dig it, it's just so dry. So I've been watering the vegetables the last couple of days, but yeah, it doesn't look beautiful, but I'm quite happy with it. And I've kind of, you know, I've put like a row of sunflowers at the side of the courgettes and just broken it up a little bit like that. I'm still waiting for a man to finish the fence, but there we go,
the ongoing saga of the fence. It's hard to find a man.
It is indeed.
Now, have you put anything in the ground, like carrots and
Carrots are up, scallions are up, beetroots are up. I need to do some brassicas and leeks and that, so that's kind of next on the list.
And then the important thing, as we were saying to Janine earlier, is just to get a bit of protection on them when you do eventually put them in the ground. Now, one of the things we mentioned last week was to plant up the hanging baskets, now that there's no frost anymore and the weather is absolutely lovely. But of course, if you planted your hanging basket last week, it's completely bone dry now, unless you've been watering it. So hanging up in the air, they need a lot of water. And hanging up in the air with a bit of breeze blowing past them, and the roots are exposed all around on the bottom, so they will need regular watering. And it's best to do it before the plants start to look a bit droopy, because a few episodes like that and they'll just give up the ghost altogether. Now, we're coming, as we're in June, we'll probably next week or the week after start to get text messages or calls in from people saying that all of the apples are falling off their apple trees and what's going on. So I thought, again, in advance, we might just warn people that that's the June drop. So fruit will start to form now on the fruit trees as they become pollinated. But eventually the tree will decide that it won't be able to support all of those. And so some of the fruit will just be kind of forced off the tree. Doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with the tree. It's just a common kind of thing that happens. We mentioned get the gooseberry plan together, because the gooseberries will be ready for harvesting sometime soon. And another thing which tend to form in gluts are the tomatoes, of course. But if you want to get a decent tomato crop, you have to start or stay on top of pinching out the side shoots from the tomatoes as they grow. And of course, keep them supported in the greenhouse or even outside if you're chancing them outside. Because if they flop over, you may get a break in the vine. So support them the whole way up. Cut off any of that kind of lateral growth that you don't want. You don't want any of those big long branches sticking out. And then in between each of the leaves and the main stem, you'll find they keep throwing out tiny, tiny little side shoots, and you want to be pinching those off. Because while they might, I had an argument with a man many years ago about whether fruit forms on those side shoots, and it does, but you get much fewer fruits on them and it becomes much harder to support the plant. And if you allow them all grow, you just get one great big mass, messy green, and it's very hard to get at the fruit, and it's very hard for the fruit to ripen. So pinch off all of those little side shoots. Weeds, how are the weeds out at your place?
Oh, the weeds are always
consistent. The weeds are doing well,
aren't
they?
What the weather is like, really, the weeds, yeah, I still have a place full of like buttercups. I did a little trial on no dig. So in a little area of the garden and stuff, I covered it in straw and hay, actually. And that has worked really well. And even this week, there was a little bit of moisture in the soil underneath the hay. So, yeah, it's good, actually.
No dig. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. I'm glad to hear that that's doing well. But it's really important to kind of try and stay on top of the weeds, if at all possible. The one that's pestering me this year at the moment is the rose bay willow herb, or the fire herb.
Oh, yeah.
It's very, very prolific. It's not actually a native, but it's naturalized out in Ireland now. It's supposed to be edible, but to me, it just tastes absolutely disgusting. Tall, very slender plant, with the leaves, in individual leaves coming from the stem, which look like willow leaves. Red flower at the top. The bees, or the smaller hover flies and so on, seem to like the flowers, but it produces thousands and thousands of seeds, so it's kind of important to stay on top of that before it produces
them.
They
have a smallish root system, though, do they?
They do. They come up nice and easy, but they also have a brittle stem, so if you go pulling them too high up, you'll break them off and they will actually reform kind of flower heads. So, but if you're able to get them up from the roots, they don't need any digging. But if one of them goes to seed next year, you're battling with 1,000 of them. Mm. And speaking of battling with 1,000 of them, despite the dry weather we're having at the moment, have you noticed the population of snails and slugs this year? It's nice and healthy.
I haven't had a problem with them yet.
Good. Well, touch wood, you don't.
Yeah, bizarrely. Now, I've kept it kind of clean around the beds and stuff. But so, touch wood, yes. That doesn't seem to be my problem.
It's been, although it was a long, long winter, it was very, very wet and they seemed to enjoy it. So the population of them is strong. And the best kind of solution for that would be a few beer traps about the place, if you can manage it, to trap them. I've found now that a bucket filled with a tiny bit of milk replacer left at the bottom is also excellent.
Oh, right.
I dropped the bucket down on the way back from the field one day, and the next morning it was full of dead slugs. So
there
I might
you go.
Do that now.
That's
every
cheaper
day.
Than beer.
But look, we've run out of time. That's enough jobs for people to be doing this weekend. We've run out of time on the show this week.
Strawberries, cherries, and an angel's kiss in spring. My summer wine is really made from all these things.
I walked in town on silver spurs that jingle too. A song that I had only sang to just a few. She saw my silver spurs and said, let's pass some time, and I will give to you summer wine. Oh, summer wine.
Strawberries, cherries, and an angel's kiss in spring. My summer wine is made from all these things. Take off your silver spurs and help me pass the time, and I will give to you summer wine. Oh, summer wine.
My eyes grew heavy and my lips, they could not speak. I tried to get up, but I couldn't find my feet. She reassured me with an unfamiliar line, and then she gave to me more summer wine. Oh, summer wine.
Strawberries, cherries, my summer wine is really made from all these things. Take off your silver spurs and help me pass the time, and I will give to you summer wine. Summer wine.
When I woke up, the sun was shining in my eyes. My silver spurs were gone, my head fell twice its size. She took my silver spurs, a dollar and a dime, and left me craving for
strawberries, cherries, and an angel's kiss in spring. My summer wine is really made from all these things. Take off those silver spurs and help me pass the time, and I will give to you my summer wine. Oh, summer.